This Is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. 2 weeks ago, Connecticut Governor Daniel Malloy answered a question many were asking. Would he run for re-election? The answer is no. Today, Where We Live will ask the state's 88th governor about the future, including how he plans to work with the General Assembly to solve another massive deficit over the next 2 years. Now, do you worry about tax increases or future layoffs? Are you concerned that important services your town or city provides will be reduced or eliminated? You can ask the governor a question, 860-275-7266. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Also, Where We Live is on Facebook Live right now, and the cameras of CTN are here too. Governor Malloy, welcome back to Where We Live.
Great to be here.
So how are you feeling 2 weeks out from your announcement that you will not seek a third term?
Yeah, well, that's when I made the announcement. I had been working on the decision for a long time before that. And if you go way back to 2006, when I first ran for governor, I said I'd probably only do two terms. I think 8 years at this particular job is a good number.
You were uncharacteristically emotional in that announcement. What was going through your mind?
Oh, the room was filled with, that's a little unfair. I am actually pretty emotional. Let's start back there. I'm deeply gratified for the people who have worked with me for me, and it was a room filled with those people. I'm quite frankly very proud of a lot of the things that we've accomplished. So that's what the emotion was about. And of course, both my wife and I have devoted much of our life to public service. I was mayor for 14 years. I'll be governor for 8 years. I served on boards and commissions for 12 years before that. It's a long body of work, of which I'm, rightly or wrongly proud.
When you made that announcement, you mentioned, again, a lot of people that know you well were in that room. But what about the residents of the state of Connecticut, many who still want to blame you for where we are today?
Well, they can blame me. I mean, that's their prerogative. The reality is that Connecticut was going down the wrong road for a long period of time, perhaps in slow motion, so people didn't recognize what they were doing. And it fell upon some number of people during a given period of time to stop that slow motion. You don't stop a train on the spot. If you could stop a boat on the spot, the Titanic would still be floating. But there's a lot of work to be done. I think some of the greatest challenges have a lot of culpable hands. A lot of folks didn't provide for the long-term obligations of the state while they were making promises that further enhance those long-term promises. And it was a gigantic mistake. Our underinvestment in transportation, which I think is one of the reasons that our economy is not as strong as it could and should be, occurred over a 40-year period of time. Our educational decline, particularly in our urban environments, probably occurred over a 50-year period of time. I mean, these are long-term and systemic issues that you cannot change overnight, but you hope to make some amount of progress while you're in a position to do so. Unfortunately, I don't think other people took the job quite as seriously.
Meaning they passed the buck.
Yeah, that's what they did. They passed the buck. And that's not, I'm not simply saying that of any particular office or any particular group of people over a long, and quite frankly, not limiting it to elected officials. Why did it take my administration to put generally accepted accounting principles in place on the first day in office? And why did it take my administration to tackle the pension obligation in a serious way as opposed to a kick the can down the road kind of way, which is what had become so popular over a long period of time? So, listen, we're in this together. We got to find a resolution together. It won't be found overnight, but every day we try to make progress.
You announced fairly early that you were not seeking re-election. You didn't want to wait till after the session was over.
No, I was originally going to do that, and I thought, in fairness to all the Republicans, of which I think there are 15 now, who are lining up, and in fairness to the Democratic field that may or will take shape, that I should get it off. And quite frankly, I was. I had made the decision, and I wasn't going to change my mind, so it was time to move on.
It helps a lot of the Democrats that are lining up that are interested because now they have more time to fundraise.
Yeah, I think it helps everybody. I think it's a matter of fairness. I wanted to be fair to both Republicans and Democrats who have their own ideas.
Some are calling you a lame duck. You refute that.
I don't know. You know, I'm not running for re-election. If that's your definition, I don't think anyone is going to take me for granted in the coming weeks, coming months, or till the last day we're working in office.
When you were thinking about whether you were going to run, were you worried that you may not be re-elected again?
No, that was not a concern, quite frankly. My concern was that ultimately, morning after morning, I'd wake up and realize I just didn't want to do this job for 12 years, that's what my decision was based on.
Does this job take a toll on your health?
No, I'm pretty healthy. I don't. It's an interesting job. It's a great job. I recommend it to folks. It's a lot of work. It's 365, 24 hours, I've put a lot into it and will continue to put a lot into it.
Are you encouraging your Lieutenant Governor Nancy Wyman to run?
What I've said is she has, I said it on that day, she has a decision to make. I mean, Nancy and I are very close and she's a wonderful human being and I'm anxious, as I assume other people are, to hear what she wants to do.
Other well-known names, Comptroller Kevin Lembo, forming an exploratory committee, Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim. Is that surprising?
It's different.
Just different.
Different.
Can we go back to talking about your legacy? When you look back at what you've accomplished in the 6 years, you have two more years left.
Yeah.
What do you think people are going to remember?
I think educational reform, which has already produced the highest graduation rates in our state's history, and most of that coming in urban environments. I think lowest crime rate in 50 years, a prison population that is shrinking rapidly, and a criminal justice system that is more fair. I think a commitment to long-term investment in transportation, which is playing itself out in all forms of transportation, whether it's our large commercial airport or which we change the management of, or the rail, or the bus, or long-term investments in making sure that we have a replacement strategy for I-84 in Hartford, for the Mixed Master in Waterbury, and for improvements on the length of 95. You name an issue, I'll talk about what we've done on that. I understand that all of those things may not be understood and appreciated. Another one, I think, our commitment to ending homelessness in the state of Connecticut, first amongst veterans and then amongst chronically homeless individuals, and our funding of 18,000 units of housing that we're currently, we've built about half of that, committed to, another chunk of it's in under construction and committed to more housing. It's pretty neat to be a state that's actually ended chronic homelessness. That doesn't mean that there won't be people who become homeless, but we've built a system that will get them off the streets and into a decent place to live and ultimately transition those folks to permanent housing. There are a lot of things to be that we should be happy about in the state of Connecticut. Sikorsky, Pratt & Whitney, United Technologies in general, and Electric Boat, three companies that many people in the state thought those jobs were, in serious challenge. And we're talking between those companies, we're talking about 20,000 jobs directly and tens of thousands more indirectly, have all been secured in the state on if not a permanent basis, over the next 20, 30 plus years. That's a pretty significant development, particularly at Sikorsky, where we're talking about a whole new product line, or at Electric Boat, where we're talking about a steep increase in production, or at Pratt & Whitney, where they have a commercial engine that now has a backlog of 8,000 orders. To have that all made in Connecticut and to know that that's going to happen for 20 to 30 years, some governor in the future is going to look like a genius when all of those jobs hit at once.
You mentioned the defense industry, obviously a very important economic driver for the state of Connecticut. But when we look at jobs recovery, it's been sluggish.
Yeah, 85,000 jobs is not a bad start. The reality is our state was hit, arguably in the top three states hit by in the Great Recession, and particularly in some of the marketplaces that we had real strength in, some of the financial services. I think also that we are suffering from a long-term liability of not having invested in urban environments, just as America decided to return to cities. If you look at, and I used to teach this stuff at the University of Connecticut and Stanford, if you look at America's history with cities, we disinvested, underinvested in cities from the end of the Second World War all the way up through about 1998, 1999. Then other people kind of figured this out and decided that, you know, the Pittsburghs and the Philadelphias and the New Yorks and the Bostons could have a future, and made commitments to those communities, particularly on the transportation side and on the housing side, and on the educational improvement side. Connecticut didn't make those investments. Now, you know, quite frankly, in Stanford, we did. While I was mayor over those 14 years. And if you look at the amount of housing that's was built in Stanford during that period of time and continuing after, and you realize who's occupying those units of housing, that's a much more vital and attractive marketplace to some folks than some of our other cities. That's why the commitment to housing in New Haven and in Hartford and in Bridgeport is so very important. We've got to make these job centers more attractive to a new millennial population and people who are choosing to live quite differently than their parents did. You know, it's not hard to meet a lot of people who don't want to own a car. It's not hard to meet people who don't want a backyard. But we didn't develop our cities in such a way that they would appeal to that group of people, and we're paying a long-term price. And that's particularly true with respect to our lack of transportation spending.
And we'll get to that later in the hour. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Governor Dana Malloy is in studio with us. You can ask a question of him, 860-275-7266. I want to take a call now. Peter is calling from Stanford. Peter, you're on the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Dan, my governor, you mentioned about the people moving back to the cities and not wanting, a car or a house or anything. But one of the most ironic statements that John McCain and Barack Obama said in 2008 was that the fundamentals of the economy are strong. And I mentioned that because 9 years later, I don't know if the fundamentals of the economy are strong even today. I think the Great Recession's continued. And I don't think it's your fault or the legislature's fault or anybody's fault. It's quick to place a blame at one person or the other. I think it's a intergenerational thing. You know, nobody's going to wake up tomorrow and say, I'm going to learn how to fix a robot. I'm going to learn how to, you know, I've been struggling to learn HTML, you know. But it's, you know, the light bulb doesn't go off, you know, if you've been in an industry or your grandparents have been in an industry like brass in Waterbury, or tools in New Britain, or I think we had a rubber factory. We have all these industries. You mentioned the great industries pockets that still are thriving, but I think the fundamentals of the economy, and the bad news is it's pretty bad in Connecticut. The good news is we have great company, because it's also pretty bad a lot of other places in the U.S. and also around the world, too. It's a global problem, too. We have the globalization.
All right. Peter, let's let the Governor Malloy respond.
I think you're making valid points, Peter, but there are places that made better long-term decisions than we did. And so you're in Stanford. I grew up in Stanford. New York had a near-death experience in the 1970s, and they learned from it. And they realized that they had to invest in themselves at a much greater rate. We had a similar experience. We had a bridge fall down in the early 80s, and we spent money on transportation for about 3 years. And then we stopped. We didn't build out Metro North to be the system that I would envision it to be in the long run. We didn't make 95 a more passable and successful highway. We didn't invest in other forms of transportation. I think you make comments about manufacturing. We're not an inexpensive place to live. Part of that is, quite frankly, our own environment. You know, we have hot summers and very cold winters. Those produce big energy bills. But manufacturing was never going to leave the face of the planet. We just stop competing for it, particularly in the areas where we could be successful, like high value added precision manufacturing, which is something which is starting to see a rebirth in Connecticut. And I mentioned the three largest companies, but they have a supply chain in Connecticut of hundreds of companies that now can feel secure in making their long-term investments, even as their state failed to make those investments and arguably may fail again. But you know, I'm a student of history. You are too, I guess, Peter. You can change a trajectory. And some places have been far more successful at doing that than Connecticut, and I've tried to restart that effort.
Connecticut Governor Daniel Malloy is in studio. When we come back from the break, we'll find out more about how he plans to work with the legislature to agree on a balanced budget as the deficit is projected to grow even more. And we'll take your questions and comments. What do you want to see Governor Malloy accomplish before his term is up? Join the conversation, 860-275-7266. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live, and you can see us live on Facebook Live. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Governor Daniel Malloy is in studio with us. It's a busy week for him. Today, he's meeting with leaders in the General Assembly to talk about how they'll work together to come up with a balanced two-year budget. The challenge to plug a $3.6 billion deficit has grown due to falling income tax collections. Do you have questions for Governor Malloy? Join us, 860-275-7266. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Governor Malloy, tell us, how bad is the news on income tax collections?
Well, I think income tax payments are down, particularly by extremely wealthy individuals in our state, that could be for a number of reasons, and that probably is because of a number of reasons. But that's where as far as we can see so far in our early analysis, where most of this is coming from. So billionaires are paying less taxes in Connecticut at the moment. But I think it is emblematic of a larger problem, and that is that we, for a very long period of time, and I've asked the legislature not to do this, has been putting our eggs in one basket, and that is that the top 1% would pay 30 or 35 or more percent of our actual revenue. They wake up to that at some point, and they react, and then there are reasons to react even further, such as President Trump's election and his promise of tax reform in 2017 could be an indication why some people might divert profits that they might have recognized in 16 into 17. That may be part of it. We don't know. People deciding to live in other jurisdictions. Quite frankly, it was a tougher year than I think a lot of people thought in the hedge fund industry as well. So, you know, there are a number of reasons, but we are probably the most dependent state on highest income earners out there. And that makes these swings, which are relatively slight, if we had a broader tax base, extreme in a place like Connecticut.
We had Keith Faniff on Where We Live last week, a state budget reporter. He told us that projections are $450 million short. Is that on target?
I think we're going to have the numbers later today based on the final numbers that came in Friday. So I would expect that's in line with what we're talking about. There are some areas where tax collections are up and the like, and we have a long time to go in the fiscal year. But I think making judgments about where we might be in the next 2 years based on filings is an appropriate step to take. And what we'll do on my side of government is then produce a budget that's in balance. That's what we do every time. And then folks will react to it. And hopefully by the end of the session, we'll have a budget, or at some time in the future, we'll have a budget.
We heard from someone on Twitter who wants to know, why are projections so off?
Again, I try to explain part of that. We don't do a survey of our billionaires and say, how much money did you make last year? And so you make assumptions based on quarterly payments. I mean, I can get very technical on this stuff, but you don't know until it's over. One of the interesting things is the first early part of April was actually very strong, which is another reason why this is evidenced in our highest income earners. That's why. If you had asked, and I wouldn't answer the question early in April, how are tax collections? But now I'll answer it. Early in April, tax collections were very strong, which means that the average person didn't have such a bad year. But the extremely wealthy, for perhaps a number of reasons, had a different year.
You're going to be talking about this with lawmakers later today.
I think we have a conversation tomorrow. I think I'd invited Republican and Democratic leaders. I do that on a regular basis, try to get people around the table to have a conversation about the long-term trajectory of Connecticut and how we change it.
Because income collections are lower than expected, how much more of a deficit are you going to have to plug over the next 2 years?
Well, the budget that I proposed was balanced, and I stand by that budget for a lot of reasons, some of which you may or may not ask me about. But for my budget purposes, if we adjust the out years, say $500 million or $600 million or $700 million, that's what it is. Now, put it in perspective, it's a $20 billion budget. So it is difficult, particularly after lean years. I mean, when I gave my budget address, I pointed out that if the legislature stayed within my spending number, that would mean that we would have 8 years in which our average increase in spending would have been 2% or less. And that's quite an accomplishment in a state where the average before that was 4.8%.
You mentioned that your budget proposal was balanced, but the Appropriations Committee last week didn't even vote on a spending plan. How do you get through that gridlock?
That's going to be interesting, isn't it? I think Democrats and Republicans in the legislature have an obligation to do their job. And that means produce budgets or at least come to the table prepared to negotiate budgets that they're ultimately willing to support. We haven't seen that in Connecticut in 10 years.
I want to take a call now. Richard's calling from Morris. Richard, you're on the show.
Good morning. The reason I'd like to say the following is many people think that the burden of economic activity and advantages are in the hands of, say, the governor. I would like to point out that I have property here in the town of Morris and have been active in the town of Morris. What I have noticed is for about over a year, amazing, over a year, our Economic Development Commission, which is supposed to be involved in promoting economic activity, not just for the town of Morris, but to ripple throughout the state of Connecticut with its advantages. I'll give you an example. The state of Connecticut has already paid for a loop of highways, that can be promoted as a tourism loop of highway around Bantam Lake, Route 109, 209, 202, Route 63, Circle of Highway. Litchfield and Morris already have important economic advantages regarding some tourism. But Bantam Lake, Connecticut's largest natural lake, could be promoted because there's property that my family has, used to be owned by Walter Mack, president of Pensacola Company. He called it top of the world. It's already zoned Lake Commercial. It can promote 300,000 square feet of buildable floor area to promote taxes, not just for Morris, but to provide a tourism advantage that is presently not here in the town of Morris. Again, our Economic Development Commission and Morris should be getting together with Litchfield. And, of course, Litchfield and Morris should recognize the advantages that can be not only for our area, but the tourism advantages can have a ripple effect in surrounding towns, again, promoting that tourism loop, I call it villages around the lake and woods.
Thank you, Richard. I'm going to have the governor respond.
Richard, if I remember correctly, the land you're referencing was also once owned by Yale University, or at least adjoins the property that was once owned by Yale University. But you're right. I mean, economic development takes place on a national basis, a state by state, a metro area, and ultimately a local community. And a lot of our communities are less accepting of economic development than others.
I wanted to go back to the gridlock at the state capitol. Again, you're meeting with legislators, as you say, tomorrow to see how you can compromise on a balanced budget before the end of the session, June 7th. The Appropriations Committee didn't vote Governor Malloy. The Finance Committee did. And something that you had said after they voted and their proposal didn't include any new taxes, you said in a quote that this year's budget should not and will not be driven by new revenue.
Yeah.
Tell us more about that, because if we're hearing that the deficit is going to grow even more, and when we talk about just cutting spending, how much more can you cut? Under your last 6 years, you have decreased state government by a considerable amount. What is left to cut?
Yeah, no, I have decreased the size of state government sizably, while we've largely increased services. So we have created efficiencies over a period of time, and we've done that in a number of different ways, not the least of which is a fairly significant investment in technology that allows people to do more work in less time. For instance, creating paperless systems for analysis, or doing field reports in the field as opposed to, you know, making notes in a book and then going back and dictating a report. So I think we need to continue to make those kinds of efficiency-producing investments. I think that's part of what we need to do. Quite frankly, you know, I listened to your intro, and you know, you talked about people being unhappy about taxes and people being unhappy about cuts and being people unhappy about change. It would be wonderful to have your job and be able to be all things to all people at all time. But that's your role. My role is to actually get the job done and to produce ultimately a budget that's in balance and spends as little money as is necessary to perform the services that people desire to the greatest degree or need to the greatest degree. And desire and need are sometimes different things.
Would you support any type of tax increase, say removing exemptions from sales tax?
In my own budget, I had some tax changes. So it's not as if I'm against tax changes. But the idea that we're going to solve our problems by raising taxes, and then ultimately that very quickly shifts to raising taxes on the wealthiest individuals in our state, 1% of which already pay about 30% of our income tax, is a very dangerous game to play, and one which I have advised against time and time and time again to pressure little avail.
We're getting a tweet from a listener, Sam. He writes, he or she, marijuana legalization is an only issue where people are begging to be taxed. It would improve public health, too. Governor Malloy, why not follow Colorado's success, according to Sam?
I'm not sure it's a success, quite frankly, but that's ultimately a question for the legislature. I think there's a difference between what we've done, and that is to decriminalize and to make available for certain uses and endorsing. But the legislature would have to pass that legislation, and I don't think that there's any likelihood that the legislature is going to pass that legislation.
This is Where We Live. You can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. We were talking about revenue. Adam from Waterford has a question. Adam, you're on the show.
Yes, I am. Thank you very much. And, Dan, I'm a big fan of yours since your Norwich Town meeting when I heard you speak, and I applaud your public service. I'd like to solve the revenue problems of Connecticut in less than 5 minutes. Primarily, by looking at other states, you see that each one of them has tolls by plate. Now, that would make other residents who use Connecticut roads pay for our expenses. And Connecticut has the best roads in the country. Unfortunately, with the traffic, you see them at 15 miles an hour.
Yeah.
But I believe that toll by plate with easy pass systems already in place is a very simple fix to help keep our roads maintained. And also, the other big question is sweepstakes gambling. I think that gambling should be allowed to everyone, not race specific, or and especially when it comes off the reservation. And that would be a big money maker for the state of Connecticut.
Okay, couple of quick things. On the transportation side, we clearly, and I've been urging, this is literally from the day I was elected, been saying to the leadership, the elected leadership of Connecticut, that our revenue with respect to transportation is insufficient to maintain our current level of spending, and our current level of spending has been under an underinvestment for the greater part of 40 years. And then what happens is a bunch of people start to play politics with it. You know, do you want tolls? Don't you want tolls? Do you want to increase this? You don't want to increase this. What I would love to actually see happen is a common acceptance that it's going to be very difficult to move Connecticut's economy forward on a long-term basis unless we solve some of our transportation problems. I mean, you know, I refer to I-95 from the Greenwich border to at least through Bridgeport as we treat that one as a parking lot. And then if you look at the Merritt, which is just a few miles away in that stretch, we treat that as a museum. No other state does that. And your point about tolls as a way to do it, there are other ways to raise the revenue. We don't have a common acceptance that we need to make the level of investment that we have to make. I've asked the legislature to do one thing when it comes to transportation. That is, pass a lockbox so that you can then have a conversation about how much money you need to spend, how you're going to raise that money, and people in their homes don't have to be quaking that you're just going to raise money those ways to spend some other way or to dodge a hard decision that has to be made in the future. So on the transportation side, we're all in. And with respect to further gaming or less gaming, I'll say a couple of things. Number one, we are where we are. Prior legislators and governors made agreements with the tribal nations. I have a very good relationship with the tribal nations. We can't ignore the reality of our agreements with those tribal nations at our peril. They are challenged. I want to be very clear that the folks in Massachusetts want to take a sizable portion of the gaming revenue out of Connecticut and put it into Massachusetts. That is a real challenge. I think the tribal nations are trying to find a way to be competitive. I think we have to take a serious look at that. But you can't ignore the reality of the agreements that we have in place that are a matter of in essence, you can't change them without giving up about $250 million worth of revenue.
I thought that the chairman of both tribes had said that if the East Windsor Casino were to go forward, that they would commit to keeping that revenue with the slot revenue with the state of Connecticut. If for some reason the federal government said that this was not this would interfere or violate the compact.
Yeah, again, that is a point of contention whether they can in fact do that and that sort of thing, and that needs to be worked out. Again, you know, this legislative process was begun last year by the legislature without my input. I keep waiting for a legislative solution. However, I will say this, that revenue source in Connecticut during the time that I've been governor has declined mightily because of the additional competition from other states. I mean, gaming in America is now ubiquitous. When I was growing up, when I was a child, there was only one place in the country you could go to make a legal bet, and that was Nevada. Now it's literally everywhere.
I want to take another call. Beth is calling from Glastonbury. Beth, you're on the show.
Oh, hi, Governor. How are you?
Good.
Two questions for you.
Sure.
I beg you, beg is not the right word, to not raise sales tax. I've had a small business in Glastonbury for 15 years, and that would just be so hard to give people another reason not to shop local. Secondly, and I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I don't know if there's anything to be done about helping us in terms of seasonal hiring, just making it just the whole payroll tax and that whole burden that it is to businesses with less than 5 employees to kind of ramp up and down for seasonality. There would just be so much more small business growth if we could do that. So I guess those are my two questions for you today.
Okay, I'll give you a straight answer on both of those. With respect to the challenges of 5 employees or less, I can't say that I'm an expert in that. You know, before I became the mayor of Stamford or the governor of Connecticut, I had a small practice law firm that I was part of, and we had more than 5 employees. So I can't say I'm expert. And if you want to send me some information of the challenges that represents, I will read it attempt to respond to you. With respect to sales taxes, and our sales tax on a national level is about midpoint when you consider that most other jurisdictions have local tax, local sales tax, county sales tax, or some other other form of sales tax on top of their state sales tax. So at 6.35, we're Midland. We're not at an extreme, as opposed to, you know, if you go down to New York, which a substantial portion of our state borders, you're talking about sales taxes that are substantially higher when you consider the local, the county, and the state. I don't know what the solution ultimately will be. We have a lot of, when it comes to sales tax, we have a lot of things that we have agreed not to tax. Some of those probably make a lot of sense, and some of them may not make a whole lot of sense. So people, I'm sure, will be taking a look at it, particularly in light of the shortfall on the income tax coming from our wealthiest citizens.
And you said earlier that you're open to looking at whether to remove some exemptions on the sales tax?
I'm open to what I've been saying in my January address, in my February address, in a very different form budget where I actually left $75 million to be allocated by Republicans and Democrats in the legislature this year, and I think it's $84 or $85 million next year. What I've said is I'm open to having discussions. Having said that, whatever we end up with as a budget really has to live within our basic means. I don't think this should be a revenue-driven discussion. I think this should be a spending-driven discussion. But if we're going to have that discussion, we also have to be truthful. Don't ask me to produce a budget that's going to have savings that I know can't be produced. Don't ask me to sit around the table with state employees to reach a new agreement and then say, and by the way, you then have to lay them all off, you know, because they're not going to reach a new agreement if you reserve the right to lay everybody off. Some of this stuff just may not make a whole lot of sense. And I think we're getting down to the point where we need to have more serious discussions about realities that present themselves in Connecticut. I'm prepared to have those discussions. I've looked at Republican proposals. I've looked at Democratic proposals. Some of those have ideas that make sense. Some of the ideas don't make any sense.
Speaking of unions, you've been working on negotiating some concessions with them to the tune of $700 million the first year of your mm-hmm. budget. How's that going?
It's going. I'm hopeful. Someone says, are you optimistic? I'm not optimistic. I'm hopeful. I think there's a recognition that employees will have to play a role, and I remain hopeful that we'll make progress. On the other hand, some of the pronouncements coming out of the legislature on budget issues raises additional questions for them. If you're going to privatize all of these functions to reach a budgetary goal, what does that mean to their current employment status? How do we bargain with a group of folks that you need to bargain with? So I'll continue to work at it.
And if you don't get those concessions, we're talking how many layoffs?
I think it's some combination of thousands of layoffs and even greater cuts to spending than I would be comfortable with, but understand that we would have to make.
This is Where We Live. Connecticut Governor Dana Malloy is here in studio. We'll take more of your calls after the break at 860-275-7266. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Connecticut Governor Dana Malloy is in studio with us to take your calls, your questions at 860-275-7266. Something that we're hearing from listeners and tweeters today, Governor Malloy, is what's happening with funding to improve the XL Center?
We own for all intents and purposes, we own the XL Center. We either have to invest in it or we have to tear it down. It's that simple. It will not go on much longer without massive improvements. It won't be a competitive environment. This is an interesting weekend. We had the circus there, which was largely sold out night after night, performance after performance. Now, we're going to have to be able to attract similar uses to that facility, which is one of the oldest of its kind in America. So there's money available to spend. Probably need to spend more money than's currently available. But I can't imagine a capital region without the XL Center.
Republican Senate President Len Fasano has criticized this idea of putting money towards the Excel Center when the state is facing an even growing deficit. Your reaction?
Yeah, that's, you know, a relatively easy cheap shot. I didn't build it to begin with. We need the facility. He knows that it would do great damage to the Capital Region. And if he doesn't know that, he should talk to the heads of Aetna and Travelers and United Technologies, and he should talk to the restaurants and the employers in the greater Capital area and understand the significant financial impact of that facility in the Capital Region. And he knows, and I know, that to replace the facility new would cost somewhere between $750 million and $1.5 billion. So to invest the kinds of money that we're talking about to modernize a facility so that it continues to be a draw makes a lot of sense.
Rick's calling from South Windsor. Rick, you're on the show.
Hi. Thanks, Lucy. Hello, Governor Malloy.
Hello.
Hi. So, you know, I've heard a lot in the recent past about this exodus from Connecticut and people leaving. You know, we're very highly taxed. The weather, like you said, really bad in the winter and hot in the summer. So why do people stay? And I think one of the reasons people stay is we have such wonderful natural beauty here. You know, it's a beautiful state. And I would just hate to see the state parks, which I have seen recently, kind of deteriorating. And I just would hate to see that asset fall victim to these budget cuts.
You know, I'm going to take you on. I agree with you, by the way. And if we could tax beauty, we'd all be very wealthy. But on the investments in the parks, I'm actually kind of proud of that. I mean, I don't know whether you've been down to Sherwood Island, where we made significant new investments, and we've made new investments along all of the major facilities on the coast, and we're getting inland. You know, a couple of years ago, I visited the remaking of cabins in one of our parks where we have overnight cabin rental. Having said that, we probably need to spend more. I wouldn't debate that with you, but we've made some very important and strategic investments, particularly when you consider what a beating Irene and Sandy gave to our shoreline, and that we had, although we got some federal money, we basically had to foot that bill by and large to rebuild those facilities. And in doing that along the coast, perhaps we were delayed in doing some of the inland projects, but now we need to get to those as well.
In your term, you have increased the state park fees at some of the parks over the last 6 years.
Yeah, I name something that hasn't gone up in cost, with the exception of electronics in the world that hasn't gone up. My salaries have gone up, benefits have gone up. It costs money to maintain facilities. Now, you can pay for that in part on a fee basis, which is what Connecticut has historically done, and then augmented the fee basis with additional capital expenditures and operating contributions from the general fund. If we do away with fees, then we're just going to have to raise that money some other way. And that's, again, the legislature can debate that, but you need to spend money on these facilities if you're going to keep them desirable.
I want to go back to your budget proposal, Governor Malloy, in terms of two big proposals that the legislature doesn't seem to agree on. One is asking municipalities to pay one-third of teacher pension costs, and the other taxing hospitals. If you can't get agreement on those two things, explain again how you're going to try to figure out a way to balance the two-year budget, the next one.
Well, we don't have an agreement on anything right now. So we won't know what the agreement is until we have one. But, you know, one of the interesting points I made about the teachers' retirement, we're the only state that funds retirements this way for teachers, the only one. In fact, when I pointed out in a speech at the legislature that how we fund the teachers' pension, I had a long-term member of the legislature who was a committee chair call me and tell me that in all the years he served in the legislature, he didn't realize that we were the sole funder along with the teachers. These are municipal employees. I listened to senators from different parts of the state argue that Connecticut's fixed costs are too great, right? But one of the reasons our fixed costs are greater than other states is we're the only state that funds teachers' pensions this way. In essence, I mean, let's take it to the extreme. Why don't we fund all police pensions, all fire pensions, all custodial pensions, all, you know, why don't we just fund everybody's pension? But we have this carve out. And quite frankly, the carve out is no longer affordable. And so finding a mechanism to share that long-term obligation so that the financial marketplace understands we take these obligations seriously and is going to be very important. That's point number one. Point number two, since the Great Recession, property taxes have been more stable than other forms of taxation. And in the state of Connecticut, I'm very proud that when many cities and towns were on their knees in 2011 and 2012, we stepped up. And helped out to a far greater extent than any other state in the nation. In fact, at one point, we were one of only six states to actually increase funding to municipal government. I think in one year, we were only one of two. So at some point, you can't continue to treat realities without addressing to new situations. And the new situation is that property taxes are very stable. And what we're seeing, particularly in a system that's very dependent on our wealthiest individuals, another tax system that's not as stable. And sharing those costs are important. That's number one. Number two, you've ignored what I'm trying to get at. In trying to share those additional costs. And that is that we are under supporting about 30 school districts in this state that educate the vast majority of our black children, our brown children, our children in poverty, our children of parents who are not particularly well-educated themselves. We know what communities they live in. We know how high their tax rates are as compared to the average tax rate. We know we have a court decision that says that our system is unfair. I'm trying to address it, and one of the ways to address that is to find the revenue necessary to bring those school systems up to the standard that you or I would like our children to be educated in. There are competing proposals out there. One is to do that over 30 years and another is to do it over 10. I want to do it today.
Christino tweets, in regards to higher ed, surrounding states like Rhode Island and New York are offering free college for residents. Would this ever be possible here in Connecticut, Governor?
Sure. We just have to raise taxes. I mean, you can't have it both ways. I mean, one of the great things and interesting, I'll go back to an earlier part of my discussion about making investments in urban environments. In the greater tri-state area around New York City, you need to understand that 9 out of 10 jobs created since the Great Recession were actually created in New York City. Just wrap your head around that. Because they made investments in transportation, because they made investments in public safety, because they made investments in improving the education. Now, imagine if Connecticut had been the situs of 9 out of 10 all Metro New York jobs having been created were actually in Connecticut. Not only did that not happen, there are real reasons it didn't happen. And the real reason it didn't happen, it might partially be taxes, but it's really transportation and housing and cost, not tax cost. Costs of housing, which we underinvested in, cost of transportation time-wise and reliability-wise. And until we're going to come to grips with these larger issues, as well as our day-to-day mundane things like how high should taxes be, we're not going to be as competitive as some of our neighbors to the north or our neighbors to the south or our neighbors to the west.
We've got less than 2 minutes, Governor. What do you hope to accomplish in the next 2 years? Are you committed to staying on till January 2019?
I mean, that's my assumption. Unless you know something.
I'm asking you.
How's your job? Maybe I should do this every morning.
You have to be likable.
Oh, are you saying I'm not likable? Yeah, that's hurtful. That's rather hurtful. I have to say. I was liked enough to get elected mayor of my hometown for 14 years, and liked well enough to be governor for. Two terms and to be elected. So that's a little harsh.
Oh, I don't think so.
Then we respectfully disagree.
Yeah, your approval rating is pretty low. A lot of residents we hear from aren't real happy with your legacy. What do you say to them? We've got less than a minute.
The total percentage of radio listeners in Connecticut who listen to this station is relatively low. Does that mean you're a bad station?
I'm not saying we're a bad station.
Right. And so I'm doing my job every day.
But you serve a lot of people in the state of Connecticut, and some of them are not happy with your legacy. What would you tell them?
Yeah, and you try to serve a lot of people in the state of Connecticut, and relatively few of them listen to you. So what would you say happened? What I would say is we're doing really hard things, and I'm teasing you a little bit. We're doing really hard things, and improving education and lowering crime and building infrastructure and making long-term investments in higher education. You know, the engineering school at the University of Connecticut will be 70% larger than it was the day I was elected, even though we found ways to save money. Our crime is lower, even though we took $70 million out of the corrections budget last year. These are hard things to do, and quite frankly, they're
We need to leave it there, Governor Malloy. But thank you for coming on the show. A lot of people do listen. Thank you.
Thanks.